Welcome to Third Tuesday Conversation, the ELCA Youth Ministry Network's monthly podcast that focuses on the ministry with those in their first third of life and their families. Our goal is to engage in conversations that help you lead in your congregations and that point you toward new thinking, ideas, and resources for your ministry. I'm Danica Olson.
I'm Elizabeth Pedersen.
And I'm Adam Butler. Hello, hello, hello again, everybody. Welcome back to Third Tuesday Conversation.
Whoop.
Elizabeth, let it out. Let it out. You were going to do a whoop whoop.
I was going to whoop it up. Like,
yeah, whoop it
so
up.
So I'm out of my head excited.
Can tell.
Plenty of reasons to whoop it up today, but one of the main reasons is we've got our friend Kevin Dragseth here with us today, and not only being a good friend, he's also a wonderful thinker and ministry leader who's been in the church a long time and has been always one of my favorite conversation partners about church and how things should or shouldn't be done, and has always been someone who's made me think differently about ministry and how I do it. And I know that he's been that for also for Danica and Elizabeth and others as well. Kevin, welcome. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thank you.
That was a lot of like accolade, Kevin. Can you handle?
Yeah, it was nice to get more than just where I'm from. So that was a
I didn't even say where you're from yet.
Okay, I just have to tell a little story for some context. So I am on the youth gathering planning team, and we just had our in-person training with our GSCs, Gathering Synod Champions, and we were leading a workshop about the gathering, and I introduced my whole team and like gave them all these credentials. And then I said, and this is Kevin from Colorado. That's literally all I said about him.
Oh my God. It's going to be funny forever.
That's good.
And she was trying to protect me because I always just say that I'm an office grunt.
Yes.
At a conversation, and she didn't want to downplay that or.
Yes, it was for good reason, but the team will never let me forget it, that I just said, and this is Kevin from Colorado.
That's good. Kevin from Colorado.
I mean, Kevin has lots of gifts and lots of weird things that he does, but the way that he, like he just said, the way he describes himself is he's an office grunt. And I'm like, someone else can't say that because it sounds like you're just like dissing them or something. So yeah. I couldn't say that.
You know, that is one thing I've always known about Kevin is he's always dreamed to be the office grunt, even when you were in ministry and doing the great work that you did. It's like, I just want to go outside and plow with a four-wheeler.
That's right.
Can I do that, please?
Yes.
So
the flexibility to be wherever and help whoever within a congregational setting, for sure.
So Kevin from Colorado. Will you at least give us some context behind your history and ministry and how you have now landed as office grunt, but still in a church, but some of the journey you've been on in the last, 12 to 15 years?
Yeah. So in the late 90s, started working at a Bible camp in Minnesota, Green Lake Lutheran Ministries. Worked there for a total of 9 summers between seasonal and permanent staff. 06, I moved out to Colorado, married Katie, and her family was all young. So we moved out here, started attending her home congregation, and they stayed pretty well under the radar, which was nice for about a year. And then they had an opening in youth ministry, and somebody had heard about me within that setting and asked me to come in and talk. So got into youth ministry in 07. At Bethany Lutheran Church in South Denver, and did that for about seven or eight years, and then was brought on up in Fort Collins to work in collaborative youth ministry. So there was 4 congregations up there that were trying to figure out how to both keep the blessing of the intimate, smaller congregational setting for their youth, but also to have an opportunity to gather with a little bit more mass and try to create some meaning out of that setting as well. So there was 4 congregations. We had a cooperative youth group between all of them, and wonderful. Did that for about 3.5 years. and then felt a call to the corporate world for a little bit. Did that for a couple of years. Loved it. A lot of insights. A lot of saw the blessings and the downsides of working in that setting. My wife passed away late in 19, and over the next few months, got laid off from corporate, of course, with COVID, and took some time just to kind of reassess what I wanted to do. My life obviously looked significantly different at that point with kids and needing something with a little bit more flexibility. So I started a little property business up in my hometown in Minnesota so I could keep those connections and have a good reason besides family to be back a little bit more often. And in the midst of all of that, I received a call from Bethany again, just saying we're looking for somebody that has some institutional and relational knowledge of the past, but also has the capacity to be visionary and help us move forward with some just into what the church might be looking for in the future. And that would be done in an office. You know, is there any way we could fit that into an office role that we have here? Didn't actually think about that for too long. They offered the flexibility to be able to still drop my kids off every morning, pick them up every afternoon, and leave when I needed to, when things came up with kids, which happens to be quite often. So, and then I work in admin with primarily with faith formation, also with volunteers, and then just in general church happenings and operations as well. So that brings me up to today. So I've been at Bethany now again for about 2.5 years.
Awesome.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that we love about you, Kevin, is the big questions that you are bold enough to ask. Sometimes that make us cringe a little bit because you can put it, well, because you can, you know, toe the line. And it's a good, good thing to have somebody like you in our lives to embolden us to look ahead and imagine something different or new for what we're doing in this life and in our church. So that's part of why we wanted to have you on today, is just to talk about what are you seeing out there right now? What kind of conversations are you having? What questions have you been asking yourself or out loud in the circles that you are a part of right now? Some of which may be about collaborative youth ministry, which I know, I mean, you said that's a part of your experience, but it seems like it might be coming up in a different way or a new way for you right now too.
Yeah. A couple of things that I'm experiencing or witnessing is one, congregations and youth leaders seem to be at a very desperate point right now. So it's hard for me as an optimist to be in. No, okay, I am an optimist overall. It comes across as not so much, but overall, I want what's best for our youth and our family and our children. And as a result, the criticalness of how we're doing that comes across maybe differently. But I'm optimistic that the idea of community around youth and family and children is at the perfect point. And there's no signs that it's dying or that it's not possible at this point. There's so many camps, even in our own synod here out in the Rocky Mountain Synod, which spans 4.5 states. Our camps have waiting lists in the summer. There's kids that are trying to get into these places and can't. Our camps are doing renovations and land purchases, and the funding is there for these things. The people are willing to be involved with youth ministries and to support ministries that support and guide youth, family, and children in their faith. The messaging doesn't always seem to match what is happening within our ministries. And I think it's just, we're in a place of fear right now, it feels like, and we're scared of what it means for our own little bubbles or our own little communities and what we might have to do to greater engage in and for our children, youth, and families, what it might mean for us, what sacrifices it might mean for us as congregations, as communities. And I guess that's what I've been kind of tossing around a lot lately, sitting in on meetings on synodical levels, on national levels, and local conversations, one-on-ones with people, is what are we going to do? What's next? How are we going to survive worshiping 20 people on a Sunday if we don't have support or access to programming/ministries within our community collaboratively. So, I mean, those are kind of some of the high level thing. I think the messaging is important in what our leaders are saying about the state of ministry and about the current situations that we're in. And then I think that the willingness to open conversations around what we can do better together is another part of that. But the fear of those conversations, and I don't blame them. I mean, if I'm asked to be on a council at a congregation, and a lot of these congregations know what those conversations are going to look like in the next few years. If my great grandpa was baptized within this congregation, I'm not taking the realm as president and leading the charge for a closure. And nor do I think that closure is the right answer all the time. But it's no wonder it's getting harder and harder to find people that are willing to be in leadership roles in congregations when we're facing, or we feel we're facing, these topics in these conversations. And that because of that, a lot more pressure, I feel like, is being put on the people that work with children, youth, and families to make something happen. And that's a huge, probably impossible expectation to place on these people. Yeah. And a lot of times when it's asked to be done in-house and by yourselves, so we can have witness to what it looks like on a Sunday or a Wednesday, is I don't know who's going to want to keep volunteering for those roles as well, or being paid for them, for that matter. But a lot of places, the reality is now there's a lot less paid staff people in children, youth, and family than there was 5 years ago /10, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Those are my burning things that I'm sensing right now.
I'm interested to know, I think we want to get to you talking about collaborative, or like talking together about collaborative ministry and what that looks like. But one question I want to ask first, because I think it leads into that, is you said that you know you're an optimist about ministry, and you are passionate about our young people and the experience that they might have in church, and that you believe that, you know, that translates, I hope, into that you believe in this stuff, I think, if I can make an assumption about that. And so I'm curious to know what you believe in about church still. Is that the right way to say it? Still. After COVID, after all these, whatever, but like, what is it that you still believe in that then informs kind of maybe where we're going on this and around the collaborative ministry? Because without a belief in that, then it kind of, then you do kind of end up in a place where I think a lot of us are going, looking around going, I don't know what the hell all this is for. Like what, mm-hmm. like, why are we putting this much energy into something that just doesn't feel like it's worth it? When you think about church and specifically ministry of the young people, like what is it that you still believe in that gets us to that place where we actually put energy into the right things in the right way?
Yeah, I think across the board in a congregation or in a larger church setting, it all comes down to community and where you find that community. And you ask so many people on Sunday morning, what brings you here today? And it's the fellowship in and around the service is happening. It's to make those connections with people again. It's to get, for some people, that weekly hug, to get that weekly handshake, to get that weekly nod of affirmation that you're seen and that you're heard and that you're loved. Whether that's a punch on the arm, whether that's a handshake, it's around knowing that you belong. I think for young people today, I think there's three words that really help us understand what people are in search of, and then how it is that we might respond. And that is that I think that people are looking for identity. They're looking for purpose. They're looking for belonging. So how is it that we can engage in spaces that help people find each of those three things within themselves and the need that they have within themselves to attain those things? Identity, purpose, and belonging. That's what I think we're looking for. I don't think it matters which building it happens in, if it's in a building. I think that ultimately they're just, people are looking for community where they can share, where they can learn, and where they just feel like they can bring whatever it is that they have and be heard and still loved for it. I think that, and that's the beauty right now in today's culture of the ELCA. I think we're open to that happening. I think that we're a space for a lot of people to bring their concerns, and right there is a launching pad to be involved in your communities and involved within the people and the families that are within all of our local settings. We can do this. I mean, it's whether that's in our own congregation or whether we broaden that out to be the larger community, that's always the goal of the church. How do we fit into the community, the broader community, whether that's our own little city? How do we broaden out to our city? How do we broaden out to our county, state, synod, region, national, international? Yeah. Where do we find community?
We've talked about this before, but a question we ask ourselves around here when we're doing anything is, in relation to the community idea, is if our congregation went away, would anybody but its membership notice?
Right.
And so, like, I think in so many ways, many congregations like you're speaking about are so focused on survival and on legacy and keeping the doors open and those kinds of things. But what we've found here is that the moment our focus turns away from our own self and our own survival and health is the moment people start flooding through our doors, because it's countercultural to the church that many of them have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
That churches who navel gaze, who say this is about us and we're only looking inward and our own survival or our own people or whatever, don't see the needs, the gifts, the blessings of the local community, like all the communities you've named, that can actually give us a fuller picture of the kingdom of God. And when you become less about survival and more about thriving, the thriving of your neighbor, people are intrigued by that, because that is not how specifically American culture is. Mm-hmm. It's about me, myself, and I. How do I get ahead? How do I get what I need, what I want, whatever? So in relation to that, I would love for you to give the foodie analogy that you have told us about before. But and this isn't right, I don't think, for every single community, but I do think it's a way forward for us to think about the future of ministry when it feels desperate.
Mm-hmm.
To change the frame, to pay attention to how you might have a different narrative. Can you say more about your breakfast, lunch, yeah, and dinner analogy?
Yeah, when I worked in Fort Collins, we had a lot of, what I started seeing was that by worshiping at four different congregations over every 2 weeks, so I went to two services on Sundays, one at two of the four congregations. So over every 2 weeks, I would see who kind of all was present at places. And it was shocking to me the first few months, how many people I would see at one place and they were out of context. And I was like, didn't I meet you at this other congregation? Well, yeah, we like both of the congregations. So we kind of go back and forth between them. And there was actually quite a bit of this. And it got me thinking a little bit more around congregational giftedness. What is it that's drawing them here for some things, drawing them here for other things? And as a foodie, I had to relate it to food somehow. But started thinking about, you know, if we treated restaurants like we treat church or congregations, how weird it would be if we only chose one restaurant. That was our restaurant for everything. So we went there for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, supper, actually, and for all of our snacks. Everything had to be done at the same restaurant. We don't work like that. That would never work. And there's a lot of places that would say, why you come into this breakfast joint looking for a fancy dinner? That's not our specialty. They just own what they're good at. And that's why you go to that place. You go to your breakfast places that close at 2 p.m. because that's their specialty. That's what they own. And they know that's what they're good at. And they're not trying to compete or put a stumbling block in the way of the steakhouses or the dinner restaurants. You go to places kind of based on what they specialize in or what they have a niche in or what they do really, really well. And in the church over the years, I mean, this is always, we have an ownership piece that we need to be all things to all people, and that we get nervous if people say they're thinking about going to a different congregation for anything. What happens to us? What's our gut instinct? What do we feel in our stomachs when somebody says, oh, sorry, my kid hasn't been here recently for youth group. They've been going with their friend over to Young Life, or they've been going with their friend over to K Life or Fellowship of Christian Athletes, whatever it is in your own cities, to a different youth group, just with their other friend over to the other youth group. That's upsetting. There's like the
thing. What's wrong with us? What about us?
Why aren't they coming to us? Why? Right?
What's wrong with us?
Yeah, we get this terrible feeling, like this ownership feeling, like, what are we so bad at that they can't find? Why aren't they bringing their friend to our place? And in reality, we should be saying, oh my gosh, so what is it that what is it about that youth group that's bringing life to your child or bringing life to you, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to learn from these other experiences in these other places. But we internalize it immediately and we are like scared. And we do the same thing on larger churches. If our members say, well, sorry, we haven't been here for a few weeks. We've went with some neighbors over to the community church, the non-denominational. Oh my gosh. What kind of feelings go through our stomach when we hear a member say that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what is it? What are they finding there? What is it in that community? And then how do we work alongside of that community to still offer something that ties them back to their Lutheran or ELCA roots instead of looking at it as such a negative? Where do all of us, you know, look at all of us as youth leaders, where do we go to refresh, renew once in a while? You know, we're all in paid church staff settings, but probably hardly any of us come back to our own congregations to get renewed on our week off and just sit in and listen to the substitute preacher or, right? We don't come to our own settings to get refreshed and renewed. So we need those partnerships and those other communities to be able to find that place of faith sometimes, that wilderness space that is in our own home front. And even collaborative ministry can attain that for us. Even look at those weeks where there's so many of us that on our weeks off, we just go to one of the neighboring congregations because we're anonymous there. And it's filling. It's like, oh my gosh, that was nice to be in a different setting and hear something a little bit different this time. So why does that scare us when somebody goes to a different youth group once in a while or to a different congregation for a Sunday worship or a Lenten experience or Advent experience?
Well, because then if everyone's going everywhere else, then what am I being paid for?
Right.
You know?
This is where my advice would be, follow the crowd. What's going on over there?
Yeah.
How do I, as a staff person, also then maybe see what's going on over there? How do I say, that sounds really neat. Do you think that they'd be okay if we came over as our whole youth group for a setting and to see why it is that it's been so good for you?
Yeah.
Right? That gives me a pit in my stomach too.
I know.
But automatically it goes to, what am I being paid for, right? It's personal.
Yeah.
And it's not about what might be good to learn from and be a part of in the broader community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I mean, the cool thing about that analogy with restaurants, for an example, right, is that like you could sit over there as a steakhouse and be jealous of how many people come in to that breakfast spot. Right. And like, wow, why are they so busy and we're not as busy? And the solution is not to just like recreate breakfast at the steakhouse, right? You wouldn't just go and see like, hey, look, they're serving breakfast. Everyone loves breakfast. Not everybody loves steak. So like, we got to do breakfast over here. We'll do it in the evening still, but like, we'll do breakfast over here, when really that's not what's happening. You have to peel back the layer of just the one thing on its face. Like, what parts of it are they doing well? Do they have hospitality down? Do they have environment down? Do they have the way that you feel when you enter the space? Do they have good community gathering spaces? Like those kinds of things that can actually influence what might improve or help you grow as a congregation. But like, what it seems like we're doing is a lot of convincing, right? Or at least trying to convince people that like, look, we can also be breakfast. We can also be this thing over here. Come look at us. Look at us. We're good at this too. Here's some eggs, you know,
and yeah, they're burnt and we actually don't know anything about cooking eggs.
Yeah.
We're trying.
Right. But the other piece of that is also that, you know, one of the things you've kept saying, Kevin, is that knowing what you do well and doing that and not trying to be something else. And I think that's one of the pieces that's at play here when we're talking about being everything for everyone. We often are kind of vanilla and are only moderately good at most things and don't really necessarily lean into the things that we are good at and owning those particular things. And then that's why I don't think people connect and why they don't find their way to our communities is because what am I supposed to buy into here? What is the thing that's supposed to actually connect me here? Because, mm-hmm. you know, again, let's keep leaning into that food analogy. I like steak, but your menu has 100 things on it. Like, what am I supposed to do? You're the Cheesecake Factory. I just want steak. Right. So, that's the one I thought of. This is an egregiously large menu and all of it is not good. Okay. Anyway, you didn't know.
No offense, Cheesecake Factory.
Except for their cheesecake. Whoa.
Okay. All right. The cheesecake is good. See, they know what they do well, I guess. Yeah. Sort of. Anyway, I'm just saying like, that's kind of what ends up happening is we end up having, and it worked for a long time to just be everything for everyone. And people just came and that's not work. You know, we've talked about that a million times. That's not really working anymore, but like this collaborative approach is a unique way of looking at it to lean into those things that we do really well. And then to rely on community partners, other churches, other organizations to pick up where we can't be that thing for people. And then to do it in a way that's like kind and compassionate and not competitive.
Mm-hmm. Or even celebratory. Like,
yeah, right.
Hey, like, that's so cool. You found a connection there. Like, we absolutely would welcome you to be a participant there. And obviously we would, you know, we want you here and you're an important part of this community, but if there's a better fit or if there's something that they offer that we can't, we're so glad you found what you're looking for.
And the opening to all that is just conversation. Mm-hmm. How many times, you know, you look at a team that you're a part of or teams that we have in our congregations. And when you actually all get together and you start looking at who's going to do what roles within that team, almost all the time, all the roles are filled. And nobody else wanted anybody else's roles, right? And when congregations get together, oftentimes when it's leaders get together, if we ask the question, what is the one thing that you would put your stake on that you're better than all of the rest of us at, all of them are going to be completely different, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to have one congregation that's going to say, the music in our worship will blow any of the other three of yours out of the water. I will bet my life on it, okay? The next congregation is going to go, I guarantee you, we got outreach in this community down better than any of the rest of you guys. We will blow any of you out of the water in outreach. The next one's going to go, we got hospitality down. You walk in, you're going to feel like you walked into your grandparents' house on Christmas Eve as a kid, and you couldn't wait to throw your bags down and get inside and start seeing what was going on because you could smell the fresh brownies, right? And the next place is going to be like, guaranteed, our youth ministry is not going to be matched by anybody else here, right? Mm-hmm. Then what happens? You're all sitting there going, oh, sweet. I thought we were all like, we could actually work together on this. I thought we were all like going against each other on these things. And all of us are saying, here's actually what we excel at. Now look at what the conversation does. Our guard goes down and we go, oh, I could see actually coming and joining you guys for some outreach stuff. Because that's an area we've been struggling. Trying to figure out what that looks like for us. We can't get a grip on it. You've already got the connections. You've already got the partnerships. What could that look like if we joined you guys for 2 outreach opportunities next year in your community? And then at the same time, the way we market within our own context and settings is all about them. We have partnered with St. John's, who does outreach better than anybody else, you know, and we're highlighting them and we're glorifying the work that they do in their community, and that Christ is found most present through outreach at this setting. So how do we, it's a no-brainer to be involved with their outreach. It's a no-brainer for us to be involved with their hospitality. It's a no-brainer for us to be involved with their children's program. It's a no-brainer in that we just promote it that way. We found an organization that does it better than anybody else. That's the language we use around our church database systems. We found a new one. Realm or EMS or eSpace.
And none of them are good.
Right. But when we're trying to sell it to the congregation, we sell it.
Yep.
We talk about all this research we did on the best database system for congregations, and this is the best one, and we guarantee you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to youth and to ministries and programming, nope. We're just going to try to figure out how to revamp it. And how many times a year are we revamping?
Many.
Many. Right. Yeah.
It changes the narrative about scarcity, about, you know, gaps or holes or whatever. If we don't have to have the pressure of being all the things and doing all the things with less and less resources, changes what's possible.
Yeah.
I don't mean to keep being the but person or the money person, but I'm going to say this. And I think a hurdle for leaders in the church, not for people who go to church, is the idea of membership. And where do people belong? And then who do they give their money to? And so then how do we continue to do ministry if our members have this multiple identity thing going on with the churches that they are involved with? I think that's where it gets scary for maybe church councils, for church staff, whatever. Like, well, how are we going to make this happen? And our people are already doing this. Like the behavior is already there. They're already going to wherever they need to go to get their needs fulfilled. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, us in some ways that need to reimagine and get on board and embrace what does it look like to lean into that. But I don't know. Maybe it just works itself out and we just have to trust and it'll be fine. But I see that being a big hurdle too.
It is. And a lot of that to me comes back to, we've touched on it, but messaging. You know, if you're standing there talking to a group of people, and so many of the settings I've been in the last few years, it is the most depressing conversation. We've only had one kid come the last 2 weeks, and it's just been COVID. You know, COVID really just, if before COVID, we were the most vibrant. I mean, how many times do you hear the word vibrant with pre-COVID, right? Everybody thought that they were vibrant or whatever. Or what if the messaging was that, oh my gosh, we have youth that have needs. We have youth that we're ready to serve. We have youth that are ready for community. You know, the United States has officially said the biggest epidemic now in this country is loneliness. 80% of people in this country are lonely post-COVID. And that was last fall they came out with that. That's one of the main concerns right now for mental health in this country is loneliness. That is our perfect place to jump in and put some positive messaging out there. We're here. We're here for you. We have places and spaces for you to be involved with outreach, to be involved with music, to be involved with conversations around things going on in your life that are personal. We have those spaces for you. It's not all on this property, but within 10 or 50 miles, we can do this together. We have people that are ready to be in community with you. If you look at even all of us on church worker salaries, right? We still all give somewhere, right? And who is it that we give to? When you go to somebody that's got they're excited about their future, excited about their vision, excited about a plan, I'm a lot more inclined to start reaching back for that wallet. When somebody's up there talking about, well, we're glad you're here. It's not quite as many people as we'd planned on being here tonight. But, or let's just wait a few minutes. Maybe some more will show up when you know nobody else is showing up. So now you just annoyed everybody by taking 3 more minutes to be more depressed because you're hoping somebody walks through the door, right? All of that messaging is not leading to people wanting to, one, be involved, or two, to give. Mm-hmm. That doesn't help your cause at all on any of those fronts. And the members that are seeing no kids in church and then talking about no kids in church, yeah, they're not going to give to those ministries. Mm-hmm. But you can do this day and age. You take a video at a youth event that's done in the community and say that our youth and our children are dispersed in that group. Here's what this was their youth group last week in community. That's what we started doing at our congregation. We send back videos from every retreat that happens, and they're played at the beginning of worship. We also have our middle schoolers who are at confirmation retreat this weekend in worship this morning as well. Here's a quick clip from them at their worship time at the Bible camp, played during worship. And they're like, whoa, that's a lot of youth that are worshiping this morning, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We got to get better at messaging.
Big time.
For sure.
It's so huge. And again, the language, using language about what is exciting and hopeful that is already happening versus the convincing people of something that isn't happening, but might, right. Mm-hmm. That we're doing a lot of convincing of ourselves that we're still like relevant and worthy. Yeah. And then we're doing, and then we say it out loud to other people. It's like, oh, that sounds really kind of miserable. And like, I don't know if I believe you really. And so you're right. I mean, the messaging, the language you have to use is not one of, I promise we still are good at youth ministry, and I promise we still have good confirmation, and I promise if you just come, you'll see that we're really nice and kind and compassionate people, you know.
And even for the small groups, we need to acknowledge the blessing of small groups. You do not get intimate, deep, sometimes dark stuff to be talked about in a large group setting. They're not the right setting for that. So for some of our groups that are smaller and that can get 3 to 4 youth during a week to sit down and talk as senior high kids, that's okay. And guess what? There's probably a lot more intentional and deep conversation and faith being formed in those smaller settings. Actually, I would almost guarantee it on an individual basis than there can be for the maybe 5 youth groups in the ELCA that have 20 or more at a weekly senior high gathering. You do not get those intimate, faithful conversations to happen when you do have the 20. It's a blessing and a curse. And if you're going to do it well, you have to take that group of 20 and break out for half of your time into small groups anyways. So if you've already got a small group that's working, talk about it. Talk about what a blessing it is that us four, with the four that are here, we are able to dig deep. We're able to get personal and be in a space that is not possible if we were to have 50. You know, 15 is this magic number I've heard in every setting I've ever been in. Everybody thinks there should be at least 15 kids in senior high youth group, right? 15, for whatever reason, is the magical number. 15 is a large group game. It's not an intimate little get to know you session where you actually get to bring your trials and the tough stuff and the joys and be celebrated with. You're drowned out in 15 to 20. So let's celebrate that we have 3-4 kids here that we are having conversations that most people in this room haven't had in years. And most people in this room, I guarantee you, you'd want to be in these conversations. You haven't felt faith like these kids have felt by being with 3 to 4 people with a caring adult or two. We have such a gift here. But that's never what's shared about our youth groups. Like, well, there's only 4 of them, right? 4 is a gift. 4 is a complete gift.
Are you running for bishop, Kevin?
Not interested in a pay cut, smaller office. And,
just stop there. Just stop.
I was flexibility just... for sure.
Yeah, Sue, really good flexibility.
That's what I was going to say, more hours.
Yeah, really understanding people on the other end. Yeah.
All right. This has been an awesome conversation.
Yeah.
Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, awesome. It was
wonderful. We love talking to you.
Thanks for the good questions.
You bet. All right. Hey, before we go, here's a few quick announcements and reminders. The next Oasis webinar is coming up soon. If you are a plus level member of the network, the cost is included in your membership. Our special guest teacher is Stephanie Caro from Ministry Architects. The topic is post-pandemic volunteers. It's a weird phase, right? She'll be talking about how we recruit, support, thank, and retain volunteers in a world where volunteerism has turned upside down. The date is April 18th, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. You can register at elcawymnet.org/oasis. The cost for non-network members and basic level members is $25. Thanks to all of you who are members of the network. Your membership makes things like Third Tuesday Conversation, our mobile app, Connect Journal, the Formation Co-op, and Extravaganza, and much more possible. If you're not a member of the network, we encourage you to join. We're grateful to be a community that cares for this ministry. Thanks so much for listening. New podcasts will be released on the third Tuesday of every month. Be sure to subscribe so you receive them as they come out and share with your friends. And finally, thanks to Paul Amlin, the 3TC producer, for his work. Have a great week. Bye.
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 You can say bye. Say bye.
Who?
You.
Oh, bye. Thanks for having me.